Jackie Leiden. This is The Connection. Images of the Middle East begin to numb and not illuminate the conflict. Blame becomes a miasma hanging over each death. The deaths keep mounting. There may not be reasons to feel hopeful about the Middle East, but there are certainly reasons to keep trying for peace. And amid a shaky ceasefire, a ceasefire during which one Israeli infant died and at least 20 Palestinians have died, there is a new set of confidence-building measures put forward today by CIA Chief George Tenet, who's been guiding talks in Jerusalem. Israel has agreed to a ceasefire contingent on an immediate cessation of all hostilities. And the plan also compels the Palestinians to arrest terrorists. But the Palestinians say that unless Israel is compelled to freeze settlements, a key recommendation of the Mitchell Commission this spring, then there is no deal. Yet time is proving that when negotiations break down, death and retaliation are the result. Connection listeners, what do you think should happen now in the Middle East? Where does it go from here? Blame is a past tense word in this discussion. And by the way, we always expect the best from Connection listeners. We're not looking for venom nor harangues. 1-800-423-8255 is the number to call. That's 1-800-423-TALK. My guest today is all too familiar with the current situation in Israel. He's a top-level negotiator for Israel with the Palestinians over this last decade. Likud Party Minister Danny Nave is the Minister of Parliamentary Affairs. He was head of negotiations under Benjamin Netanyahu. And most recently, he oversaw the Israeli Knesset's dealings with the Mitchell Report. He joins us in our studios. Welcome, Minister Nave.
Good morning. It's a pleasure to be here on your show.
Thank you. And I should say that we had very much hoped to have a key Palestinian negotiator here, but as these developments are unfolding, even as we speak, he's been called back to the table. So first, we will have NPR correspondent Linda Gradstein on the line, who's joining us from Jerusalem. Linda, thanks for being here. And tell us what the latest news is. Maybe you can sketch out this Tenet recommendation a little better than I have.
Well, the latest news, just from about 2 minutes ago, is that CIA Chief George Tenet says that his mission has ended, and he apparently put the blame on the Palestinians. This is just being reported as we speak from Israel Radio, and I have not been able to confirm this yet with the Palestinians. They met with the CIA chief today. They then went back and held a second set of consultations with Palestinian leader Yasser Arafat, and in fact, the Palestinian leadership has now announced that they're having a special meeting to discuss the ceasefire plan. But apparently, they have asked for major revisions of this plan, and Israel refused those revisions, and therefore there is, as of right now, no agreement on a ceasefire. Now, the plan by CIA Director George Tenet has never been officially published, but media reports on both sides say that it includes an immediate ceasefire on both sides, and for Israel to withdraw its troops to where they were before the violence began. The Palestinians are supposed to arrest dozens of Muslim militants who were let out of Palestinian jails since the Palestinian uprising began almost 9 months ago. And the Palestinians are also supposed to end incitement in their media. Now, what's missing as far as the Palestinians are concerned is a timetable that would then obligate Israel to, first of all, lift the closure and the siege of Palestinian towns, and that would also freeze settlements. So there are sort of major differences on this plan.
Well, you've done a good job of outlining those. I think that events have been moving so fluidly over the night. You mentioned that we really don't have a published report of the items in the Tenet plan, but it sounds, from what you're saying, that this is dead on arrival unless the Palestinians come back, who knows, maybe by the end of this hour, with the counteroffer. Again, define the Mitchell Commission had said that settlements must stop, and the Palestinians wanted that bundled into the Tenet recommendations. Is that the major sticking point?
That seems to be. Apparently, the difference is the Palestinians have been saying that the Mitchell report should be a package. In other words, you can't do things stage by stage. First stop the violence, then have a cooling off period, and then first start talking about settlements. They want a guarantee. They want a timetable. the Tenet report, the Tenet proposal, which apparently conforms much more to what Israel wants, is a complete cessation of violence first, then a six-week cooling-off period. And Israel has said that if even one stone is thrown during that period, they start the 6 weeks over again. And only then will they start to talk about settlements. Hmm. So the Palestinian perspective is that the Mitchell report gives the Israelis what they want and doesn't give the Palestinians what they want.
Okay. Let's bring in Minister Dani Nave, who left Israel before Sunday, just before any of this really got moving. You and the CIA chief must have probably crossed in midair. What's your reaction to this news? It sounds as if there's no one to talk to, at least at this hour.
The report was accurate, first of all, in respect to the Israeli position. We have decided to adopt the proposal put on the table by Director of the CIA, George Tenet. We believe that this is the right way to move ahead, although we have our own reservations as well on that proposal. I am sorry to hear that the Palestinians are not ready to move ahead in the same way. Unfortunately, we have witnessed during the last 8 months a well-organized violence and terror campaign by the Palestinian side. And it's about time that the Palestinians understand that there is nothing that they can gain through the use of violence and terror against innocent civilians. And I really hope that by the end of Tenet's visit to the area, they would come to the conclusion that they have to accept his proposal. By the way, from what I hear from the report from Jerusalem, is that basically what the Palestinians are trying to do here is to change the Mitchell Committee report, because George Mitchell and his colleagues mainly recommended that there will be separated stages with no linkage between the first stage of the call upon the Palestinians to put an end to the violence and the second stage calling upon the parties to make some confidence-building measures and some political moves.
Well, since we don't have a Palestinian representative on the phone at this minute, let me just jump in and say, from the outset of the Tenet discussion, they had said that it favored Israel, that it obligated Israel to do less than it obligated the Palestinians to do, that without some guarantees or some kind of confidence-building measures on settlements, it left them in a difficult position to deal with the violence. And they never for one second interpreted this as being fair to the Palestinian side.
You have to bear in mind that the Mitchell Report recommendations deal first of all with the first stage, which is the need of the Palestinians to put an end, an unconditional end of the violence activities. And in this respect, there is no. It's quite understandable that the bargain should be lies on the shoulders of the Palestinians and not on Israel, for the simple reason that these are the Palestinians that run this terror and violence campaign and not Israel. And the Mitchell report recommended the parties first of all to implement, or recommended the Palestinians first of all to implement this obligation of a complete and immediate and unconditioned cessation of all violence activity. And it is not an Israeli position that we should not make the linkage between political issues like the issue of settlements and the obligation to put an end to the violence. This is the American position, this is the Mitchell Report position, and there should not be any linkage with the need of the Palestinians to put an end to the violence in other political matters.
Linda, how do you think this is going to play there? I mean, over the weekend, I know that the Israeli press was really monitoring what world opinion was making of both positions, and that the Palestinians were really not the first time, but there was a definite emphasis on them kind of losing the moment, especially after the Tel Aviv disco bombing and a certain retrenchment seeing, certainly this has started with last summer, but an emphasis of blame. And now you're saying that CIA Chief George Tenet also appears to be laying the blame on the Palestinian side. I mean, what do you think the reaction is going to be?
Well, I think, you know, on the Israeli side, I think they are very much enjoying kind of being on, the good boys in terms of international public opinion. I think so often, you know, Israel feels, at least, that, you know, international opinion, especially Europeans, are sort of, you know, biased against them and pro-Palestinian. And now all of a sudden, you know, everyone's saying, well, Israel's the good guy, and Ariel Sharon, the prime minister, is really doing the right thing by not responding. I think Palestinians will see it as the continuation of a media that is biased against them. They feel that, you know, international opinion is really sort of a lackey to Israel, that they just sort of do what the Israelis want. And I think that it will, you know, Palestinians are very frustrated because the way they look at the tenant plan, they say that, you know, the Palestinians aren't getting what they need and that they're sort of having daily problems getting from one place to another in the West Bank. The Palestinian economy is a shambles. And Israel, they feel that Israel's demands are being satisfied and the Palestinians' demands aren't. So I think it could very well lead to increasing Palestinian frustration. Israeli intelligence chiefs, by the way, say that the Palestinian Authority has stopped several large terror attacks that were about to be carried out, and by suicide bombers and car bombs, and the Palestinian Authority did stop them. So it seems that the Palestinian Authority, especially in the past week, is really trying to crack down on terrorism.
That seems to me, Danny Nave, an excellent reason for Israel to do all it can to at least talk peaceably here, to at least perhaps hold off from assigning more blame. I understand that there is much internal pressure on the Israeli side at home, but the arrest of perhaps or detention or prevention of up to several suicide bombing attacks in this last weekend, I would think would make Israel stop and think about the stakes here.
It's very important to understand what are the steps that are needed to be taken by the Palestinian side. We expect the Palestinians to really put back in jail all of those Islamic Jihad and Hamas terrorists they released from jail. Arafat released dozens of terrorists from jail a few months ago, and those terrorists are terrorists that have blood of innocent people on their hands. And as soon as Arafat released them from jail, they moved ahead with committing further terrorist attacks. And it is more than that.
No one is debating that. I think the question is what to do now. It's widely known that Yasser Arafat has nearly as much trouble dealing with internal divisions between the Palestinians as it appears that your government is going to have dealing with its own extremists.
No, I don't think that there is any comparison between the two. It's very important to understand what we expect from Arafat for the simple reason. If these kind of expectations, but by the way, not only Israeli expectations, but also the American expectations from Arafat, are important, so we won't see any further suicide bombers in Tel Aviv and Jerusalem and further terrorist attacks. They are needed so we will have a real ceasefire on the ground, not only in words, but in deeds. And this is why it's so important that Arafat would arrest those terrorists that he released, that he would replace the green light that he gave Hamas and Islamic Jihad to commit terrorist attacks with a red one, a red light, that he would put an end to the terrible incitement on his official television and radio stations calling for suicide bombers in Tel Aviv and Jerusalem. And as soon as Arafat do these things, we will be able to know and to understand that he is really serious in his willingness to put an end to the fire.
We'll come back to you, to Linda Gradstein, and to your questions in the next segment of The Connection. And we want to hear from you listeners and what you have to say. So please call The Middle East Connection at 1-800-423-8255. 1-800-423-TALK. You're listening to The Connection on NPR.
From Boston.
I'm Jackie Leiden. You're listening to The Connection on NPR. We're talking today about quickly unfolding developments in the Middle East, a new peace plan or peace proposal, perhaps is a better characterization, put forward today by CIA Chief George Tenet in Jerusalem, appears to be in trouble. We've been talking with NPR correspondent Linda Gradstein from Jerusalem. And also we're joined by Israeli Cabinet Minister Danny Nave, who is here with us in the studio. And we're hoping that we will have a Palestinian negotiator before the end of the hour. We did have one lined up. Linda, I wanted to ask you, do you think that the awareness that there is difficulty by Yasser Arafat in arresting extremists is well known, and is it, does it become a factor in these negotiations or not?
I think it's certainly a factor. I mean, I think from Yasser Arafat's point of view, he feels that he arresting these militants is first of all going to be very unpopular on the Palestinian street. Two new polls that came out in the past week show that about three quarters of the Palestinian population supports suicide bombings, and there is an increase in support for Hamas and Islamic Jihad as the you know, people are growing increasingly frustrated.
And so, we should point out those polls were taken by the Palestinians themselves.
Yes. Yes, mm-hmm. Those are Palestinian polls. And you know, I mean, I think it's as much a I think it doesn't mean that people say, you know, I'm going to go out and be a suicide bomber tomorrow. I think it's a reflection of frustration. But that is a significant increase from last year when those polls were taken.
I think that Yasser. If I may interrupt,
yes.
This is probably also part of the or as a result of the daily incitement that you have on the official television of the Palestinian Authority calling for suicide bombers or inciting kids to be suicide bombers. So you cannot be surprised if you can see such, you can find out that these are the numbers among the population if they have gone through such a brainwash every day, calling them to be suicide bombers.
I'd like to jump in on that. I just happened to have returned recently, within the last few weeks myself, as Linda knows, from a couple weeks there in the region. I certainly don't have my colleagues' long expertise on some of the nuances of the peace process. But I did spend my time, as Linda knows, in this case, talking to parents on both sides of the line, parents who had lost children, Palestinian and Israeli parents. And one of the most interesting conversations I had was with a Palestinian mother who talked in great detail about her efforts to keep her child away from what was being broadcast on the television, to talk to him about how important it was not to go to the fighting, not to throw stones. Another Palestinian parent talked about the anguish experienced when their child was killed in his bedroom by a shot fired by an IDF patrol guarding a settlement. So I do not think that we, in any measure, can sit here and say that Palestinians don't do all they can to prevent kids from, or nearly all they can.
Maybe the mother, the mothers do whatever they can in order to prevent their kids from being involved. The problem is not with the mothers, because I have no doubt that the Palestinian mother cares, or the Palestinian father cares about his kids as much as I do, as much as I care about my kids. The problem is not with the parents. The problem is with the Palestinian leadership. And our audience have to be aware of the fact that the Palestinian media is not a free one. There is no free press, really, over there. And what they have over there is an official Palestinian television and radio stations and official clips of the Palestinian Authority and Arafat's people inciting to such kind of violence activities.
And
saying
Jackie,
I have to say that I'm really and I'm deeply sorry for any death. And there is nothing more terrible than the death of a kid, in my mind, whether he is an Israeli or Palestinian.
By the way, Danny, you may not be aware that apparently Martin Indyk, the ambassador, today said that in the last few days there has been a decrease in the incitement on the radio and TV, that they do see a difference. But let me just get back to Arafat.
I really appreciate
and the
that.
Point. The point that I wanted to make was that I think Arafat feels he has to be able to give people something before he can, some sort of political concession, before he can go and arrest these militants. Otherwise, what have the past 9 months or almost 9 months of violence and all these deaths, what have they brought the Palestinian people? So it's going to be very hard for him to arrest these people.
Lina, these are not political concessions. What we expect from Arafat is not political concessions, but security measures that he has to take, and not security measures that needed in order for Arafat to take care of other people's initiatives, but of his own initiative to start this violence and terrorism campaign. He is the one that initiated this terror campaign against innocent Israeli citizens, and this is why it is his responsibility to put an end to that.
Well, I think Linda's point is a good one, but let's go to the phone and see what our Connection listeners have to say. You're listening to The Connection. Call 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Don is on the line with us.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
First of all, I would like to touch on his last point. First of all, I think that a lot of people in the world regard the Palestinian as being an occupied territory. And if he doesn't believe that, then he should look at the UN resolutions, because there are far more UN resolutions against Israel than there are against Iraq.
But what's your point, Don? What's your point about the negotiations going on today?
First of all, the Mitchell Report does say that the violence began because of the continuing construction of settlements.
Let's address that point. That is one thing that the Mitchell Report had to say. Don,
first of all, there is no justification whatsoever for the use of violence and terror. Could you justify the use of murders of... One second, Jackie. Could you justify the murder of young kids in order to achieve political goals, whatever they are? There could not be any legitimization or justification for such kind of policy. And in respect to the Mitchell Report, I have to say that this is not what the Mitchell Report is saying. What they are saying is that they could not come to the conclusion or to the about this. And they called upon Israel to take confidence-building measures on the issue of settlements. And we are ready to consider those kind of measures as soon as the first stage of the Mitchell Report is being implemented, which is the complete and unconditioned cessation of all violence activities by the Palestinian side.
Okay, Don?
Then WBUR has been lying to us with their reports, the way they portray the report. Because the report, as you quoted, or you didn't, but WBUR reporters quoted, it says that there is a direct link between the violence and the settlement.
I'd be delighted then to send you the copy of the report and the copy of Mitchell's statement right after he has issued the report. And he said explicitly, George Mitchell said explicitly, and Secretary Powell said right afterwards explicitly, that should not be any linkage between the issue of the Palestinian obligation to put an end to the violence and any other political matters.
Let me just jump in here. I certainly wouldn't say that any one media outlet's characterization of this report will result in a bottom-line definition of just what is in it. Linda, remind us again in terms that I think any of us would understand what the Mitchell Commission report, which was issued in May after a long study led by Senator George Mitchell, has to say about the settlement question.
My understanding is that in some ways both Don and Danny are correct about this. The Mitchell report calls for an end to violence, first of all, but it also says that that the settlement expansion by Israel has been one of the causes of the violence, and it calls there's a series of confidence building measures that both sides are asked to take, and one of those is for a complete freeze on Jewish settlements. Now, my understanding of this is that the way Secretary Powell interpreted the Mitchell report is a little bit different than the way former Senator Mitchell originally meant it. And Secretary Powell, Danny is correct, said, first of all, the violence has to stop and that there is absolutely no linkage between an end to the violence and Israel's freeze on settlements. But the Mitchell report does call for a complete freeze on expansion of Jewish settlements.
Don, thank you very much for that question. Let's go to Mike, who's on the line.
Hi. I'd like to ask about the reluctance of the Arabs to re-arrest the terrorists that were released several months ago. It seems that the arrest of terrorists was something that was agreed to earlier and implemented earlier, and now the Arabs are going back on that. And I can understand that things have changed, and the Arabs are now worried about danger to prisoners that are kept in jails after the Israeli bombings of some jails, but there's some pretty simple ways of dealing with that.
Pretty simple ways. Well, I think we might ask Linda whether that is an apt characterization. Linda, we talked about this a little while ago. Yasser Arafat's Palestinian Authority did release perhaps as many as several hundred pro-terrorist people back in September. Rearrest has been difficult. Tell us what's happened.
Well, you know, it's interesting because this same exact question came up in 1996. There was then a spate of suicide bombings that killed, if I'm not mistaken, 63 Israelis. And Israel again came to Yasser Arafat and said, you know, these people must be rearrested. And then he did do it. I think that it has more to say about the political climate and the lack of trust between the two sides, that he's not willing to do it now. It's not a question of whether or not he can do it. I think he certainly can, but I think he will pay a political price. And it's also a question of, you know, the Palestinians that I speak to, from Palestinian officials all the way down to the man on the street, they really don't think that Israel is serious about the ceasefire. At the same time, the Israelis, from the officials down to the man on the street, think that the Palestinians are not serious about the ceasefire. So there is a basic lack of trust that the other side really wants this to work. I think that if Yasser Arafat became convinced that Israel really was committed to a ceasefire, that Israel will move its troops back to positions that they had taken before, that Israel is willing to at least seriously curtail settlement expansion, if not freeze it completely, I think that Arafat would rearrest the militants. But I think the Palestinians feel that can't be the first step. It has to be one of a series.
Okay. Let me just get on the line with Mike here, our listener, and then we'll come to you.
I was thinking that perhaps I understand that there's a political problem for Yasser Arafat here, but perhaps the Americans could help break this deadlock with something that would at least save face but also address the underlying concerns, which is that if the Arabs really are concerned about the Israelis bombing the jails, which is a real concern, and the Arabs are also asking for international observers, it seems that if you had international observers that were just stationed at several prisons to guarantee that the prisons weren't being used for other activities, they were only prisons, that they were secure, that would be acceptable to the Israelis. It would also be acceptable to the Arabs and would provide a way of saying, yes, we've gotten something, we're protecting these people, we're not putting them into a jail.
Okay, Mike, thanks for that.
If I may comment on this one, you know, that I would like to update Mike and our audience to this morning that we had an agreement like that, and I was personally speaking, I was involved in negotiations that led to the Y Memorandum back in October 98, and we had an understanding with Mr. Arafat that we will have a vet mechanism with the CIA involvement to prevent what we had at that time of the revolving door policy of those terrorists that Arafat at that time released from his jail. By the way, these days we don't have the revolving door policy anymore because simple for the reason that we don't have any doors at the entrance of the Palestinian jail anymore. And we are interested in that, and I'm sure that Arafat, regardless of anything, is capable of bringing these terrorists back to jail. And this is, Linda, this is not a political issue. This is, I have to tell you and Jackie and our audience, this is not a political issue.
Okay.
And why is that? Allow me to continue.
I'd like to respond
because,
to
you
that.
Know, one sec, with your permission, Jackie. The basis of all the agreements and understandings between Israel and the Palestinians is the need of the Palestinians to prevent terror and violence.
Okay.
And if they cannot do so, if they are not ready to do so, if they are not willing to put an end to the violence, what is the hope that we have in our area for peace with the Palestinians if this basis obligation of the Palestinians is not being fulfilled?
Well, does anything not become a political issue? I'd like to get back to the role of the Americans in this, because there were two envoys, not one, there over the weekend, and one is still there, U.S. envoy William Burns, who has been meeting, trying to address the very thing that you're talking about. I mean, certainly this has been on the table, addressing it with the Palestinian side. And For a long time, we didn't see much involvement by this administration other than telephone calls from Colin Powell. So I'm wondering if you feel, as someone who has been close to American negotiators before, you mentioned 1998, what difference the American involvement is making now and at this point, this late point?
First of all, I really appreciate the efforts of the American administration during the years and these days as well in order to help us to achieve peace and security to the people of Israel and to the Palestinians as well. And I appreciate the present efforts by the director of the CIA, George Tenet, that is trying to bring about an agreement over the ceasefire between Israel and the Palestinians. Still, we have to bear in mind that the only way for Israel and the Palestinians to achieve agreements is through direct negotiations and direct contacts. All the agreements, all the peace agreements between Israel and the Arab countries with Egypt, Jordan, and the PLO were achieved only through direct negotiations. The Palestinians from time to time are trying to internationalize the conflict. This is a big mistake. This is not the way to achieve agreements. The only way to achieve agreements is by both parties, and we are ready to do so, to take responsibility to fulfill and implement these signed agreements that we have between ourselves and to move ahead for further agreements between Israel and the Palestinians based on this idea that the only mean to achieve agreements is through direct negotiations.
Let's go to Rona on the line and ask what if you think that the Palestinians have internationalized the conflict and what you think about American involvement up to this point. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. Rona, would you join us?
Yeah. First of all, I'd like to say I'm an Israeli, and second of all, I'll go back to something that the speaker just said about direct negotiation and direct contact with Palestinians. Now, you have to recognize that within, you know, the Palestinian nationality, there are, you know, large amounts of refugees that have not resided in Israel since 48, 47, and so on, as a result of them being expelled from Israel, what is now Israel. Now, direct negotiations and direct contact goes back to Oslo and the decision by Clinton and Rabin to strictly not speak with anybody, any Palestinian who has resided during this whole time in Palestine. And this is again going on now in Arafat's leadership, where a lot of his... You know,
Rona, we're going to have to come back to your point and maybe ask you to hold that question because we're just about out of time in this segment. You're listening to The Connection on NPR. We've been talking with NPR correspondent Linda Gradstein in Jerusalem and also with Israeli negotiator and cabinet minister Danny Nave. The connection is at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK, talking about today's developments in the Middle East. You're listening to The Connection on National Public Radio.
From Boston.
I'm Jackie Leiden. You're listening to The Connection. We're talking today about quickly developing incidents in the Middle East, the new possibility of peace apparently already stymied, a proposal put forth by CIA Director George Tenet, who has been in Jerusalem talking to both sides, and another American envoy is still there. Tenet has apparently left. We have in the studio with us Israeli Cabinet Minister Danny Nave, and on the line with us, NPR correspondent Linda Gradstein, and we had been hoping and still may get a Palestinian negotiator, which had been our agreement with Mr. Nave before going on the air. And we've been talking to Rona, who had a question. Rona, could you come right to the point on that question and ask it, please?
Well, the point is that there hasn't been direct contact with legitimate Palestinian leadership throughout this this so-called peace process.
Well, I think that Yasser Arafat has been at the head of these negotiations. Daniel Nave, you want to?
Yes, you know, Yasser Arafat is not only the chairman of the Palestinian Authority, but he's also the chairman of the PLO. And he signed the agreements between him, the Palestinians, and Israel as the chairman of the PLO. And I would like to remind Rona that back in September 93, Chairman Arafat sent a letter to the late Israeli Prime Minister Yitzhak Rabin saying that he recognized on behalf of the whole Palestinian people this right of the State of Israel to exist, and that he also stated over there that he is abandoning the path of terror. And unfortunately, what has happened recently, that he moved back to the path of violence and terror. And I hope that sooner than later we will be out of this situation and Arafat will understand that this is not the way to achieve results. On the issue of refugees, I must say that it was agreed upon in all the agreements that were signed between Israel and the Palestinians that the issue of the refugees should be dealt with through the permanent status negotiations. And we were just involved in these kind of negotiations about a year ago. Unfortunately, those negotiations did not bring about results, although really forthcoming proposals that were put on the table by our previous Prime Minister Ehud Barak. By the way, proposals not only to freeze settlements activity, part of Barak's proposals were to dismantle part of the settlements, and still Arafat decided to say no and to move ahead with his campaign of violence and terror.
We have another caller on the line. Thank you, Rona, for your point. We have another caller, Hussein Ibish, is on the telephone. Hussein, I understand you're communications director for the American Arab Anti-Discrimination Committee.
Yeah, I must say, I was not asked to call as a caller. I was invited to come on as a guest, is my understanding. Certainly, that's the way it was represented to me. So I think I ought to be treated as such.
Well, welcome to the show, and please
now,
make your point. Thank you for joining us.
You're desperately in need of balance, so you need to bring me into this discussion with a question. I didn't call on my own initiative. You need to involve me in this discussion.
That is why we have you on the phone.
Excellent.
Sir.
So lead into it.
Well, I would like to ask you then perhaps to respond to this.
I think that's fine. I will just respond to that. First of all, the Prime Minister Barak's proposals amounted to a proposal for Palestinian, not independence, not an end to the occupation as required by international law, but for a Palestinian autonomy within a greater Israeli state, for Palestinians to have administrative control and a so-called sovereignty.
Mr. Ibish, could we get to what's going on, though, today?
Sure. Well, I mean, you asked me to respond to Mr.
Yes,
Navi's comment.
Let's go with what's happening right now. Right now, we have two sides not talking within the last couple hours.
Right, you're right. Two sides are not talking because Prime Minister Sharon will not talk. The Palestinians spoke until the Taba agreement. They continued negotiating. They have never suspended negotiations. It is the Israeli government that refuses to negotiate until all resistance to its brutal occupation, 34 years of brutal occupation of the West Bank, Gaza, and East Jerusalem, stops. And let me just explain something. I think your listeners need to know what occupation means. I think it's a word that doesn't really resonate with the American public. They don't know what this word means. It means a systematic structure of violence in the daily lives of ordinary people.
All right.
It means home demolition.
Thank you for that opinion, Mr. Ibish. And Mr. Ibish is with the American Arab Anti-Discrimination Committee.
If I may, Jackie, with your permission, comment shortly on this one. Make a comment on this one because I would like to update on the facts. Mr. Barak's proposal to Mr. Arafat was that Arafat would be able to be the president of the Palestinian state, mm-hmm. almost within the June 4th, 1967 borders, and still Arafat decided to say no to the end of the conflict and to move ahead with his terrorist campaign. And by the way,
said that we were not going
by the
to
way,
deal
one second,
with some
on,
of the blame
on, yeah,
being
but one second
here.
Because you know,
and I would like Linda Gradstein
I,
to
I'm
respond
just saying, I would like to comment shortly on that because it
are.
Was just mentioned that there are Palestinians that live under occupation, and our audience have to know that about 97% of the Palestinian population don't live under occupation anymore. They live under Palestinian authority rule and not under an Israeli rule.
Linda, what do you think that the once you get past some of the more overt hostilities going on right now, the Palestinians would have to say about conditions in their daily lives in the West Bank and Gaza?
You know, I yesterday was doing a story about travel restrictions, and I went to a little village which is about within the Jerusalem boundaries, a Palestinian village called Jabal Mukabbar. It's just on the eastern southeastern outskirts of Jerusalem, and I interviewed a young man, a carpenter, and he lives in one part of the village, and he has a carpentry workshop in the other part of the village. And he used to travel about 6 minutes. He used to get in his old battered car and drive to his workshop. He has five kids. He's never been involved in any kind of, you know, violent activity against Israel. And on Sunday morning, after the suicide bombing that killed 20 young Israeli teenagers, he got in his car and was going to his workshop. And about three quarters of the way there, the road was torn up. Israeli bulldozers had come and had simply torn up the road because that road is also used by Palestinians who want to try to skirt Israeli roadblocks. And so this man cannot get from one part of the village to another. There have been several Palestinians. I know of one case for sure where a father in his 40s who needed dialysis was stopped at an Israeli roadblock and not allowed through, and he died at the roadblock. There was a woman last week who gave birth at a Palestinian woman who gave birth at an Israeli roadblock, and the soldiers apparently didn't believe she was really in labor until the baby came out. And they were rushed to the hospital in critical condition. Thank goodness they've recovered. Tens of thousands of Palestinians can't get to their jobs in Israel. The Palestinian economy is on basically has collapsed. The only reason that we're not seeing starvation there is because the UN is providing food aid. The UN a few years ago was providing food aid to 8% of Palestinians. It's now providing food aid to 80% of Palestinians. So the daily life is extremely difficult for Palestinians. I just would like to say on the Israeli side as well, there's also difficulties. People are scared. People are staying away from crowded places. There is fear that, you know, people are very afraid of suicide bombing. So I think that on both sides, you are having a lot of difficulties.
All right. Thank you, Linda. Amy is on the line. Amy, would you ask your question? You're listening to The Connection at 1-800-423-8255.
Hi. I was very glad to hear Danny Nava's comment that he believes there's no justification for the use of terror, especially against children. And I would hope that he might share that thought if he is one of the negotiators with the director of our own U.S. CIA, because unfortunately the CIA has a long history of using terrorism and involvement in anti-democratic practices, which I'm sure makes the rest of the world community just laugh at the idea of the CIA trying to broker a negotiation, especially when one of the parties, Israel, is a recipient of billions of dollars of aid from this very country.
Okay, let's get to your question. Thanks for that point. Linda, why was the CIA chief the negotiator here and not the U.S. Middle East envoy, William Burns?
Well, I think part of it is because there has to be agreement between the Israelis and Palestinians on security issues. And the CIA in the past has been sort of a guarantor that to both sides that the other side will keep their promises. I actually think it was a pretty good choice of envoys. I think that both sides see George Kennan as somebody that has credibility. And when you're dealing with these kinds of security questions, I think both sides need to feel that the United States is going to back up whatever agreements and whatever security agreements have been taken. And I think that's why Tenet was chosen. He also has a tremendous amount of experience. He's been doing this for quite a long time, and he has very good contacts on both sides.
And was welcomed by both sides. Thank you, Amy. Ben is on the line. Ben?
Hello?
Yes, you're on the line with The Connection.
Okay, thank you. I have a question, really a two-part question on the coping with the violence and how it has affected the mood and morale. I know that recently on NBC News, I saw an item about Palestinian children being taught in school to say, "May Allah destroy the Jews," in unison. And I'm wondering, do Israelis see that? Do they see that in their news? And do they actually think that, do they have some hope for peace when they see that I guess you'd call it incitement.
Well, first of all, let me just say that as a reporter, I can say that news sometimes zeroes in on the most sensational item. Linda, would you say that is a fair characterization of what gets talked?
Yeah, I think that is true. I think that is. I don't know. You know, the truth is I am not familiar. There certainly has been incitement on Palestinian television and radio and those kinds of things. Whether or not, I would tend to doubt that that's a daily occurrence in Palestinian classrooms. But I honestly am not, I don't know.
If I may comment on this one, Jack, with your permission.
Why don't you comment on how people, we know that people are scared. Linda has said that. We know that people are worried, and we know that people who have to send their children to required military service are perhaps the most worried of all. I think it might be more significant if you would comment on the fallout from the breakdown in today's discussions and where things are going to go next.
First of all, we have to understand that there is such an incitement on a daily basis.
I think calling for
calling for Palestinian kids to become suicide bombers. And the problem is more than that. If we really want to expect peace and we hope for peace, and we will never, as Israelis, will never stop striving for peace, we have to understand that the main problem is the kind of incitement not only on the television, official television of the Palestinians, but also in their textbooks. The way they teach their kids in schools, in high school, in elementary school, for incitement, for hatred, bloodshed is really terrible.
But Mr. Navid, that is not where things are today. Palestinian textbooks are not what is on the table.
Yeah,
it's
on the table because it's not,
Jackie, what conditions are like in these territories.
Yes, but I think if you want to expect peace, there is one thing that is more important than agreements between leaders and politicians, which is the way that you teach your next generation. If you don't teach your next generation for peace, it is something that is very bad for the future. In terms of the present situation on the ground, if you know that there is a terrorist that may come out of a village to commit suicide bombing, maybe to kill kids in Israel, would you let him get out of that village, or would you stop the road and would you prevent him from getting out of that village? I'm sure that your responsibility for human life will bring you to the conclusion that you have nothing to do but to stop him and to prevent him from entering Israel and to commit suicide bombing.
We've got just a second here. Can you just in 15 seconds say where you think stand now? Because it sounds to me like things haven't advanced very much.
We adopted the Mitchell Report. We also agreed to the proposal put on the table by Director of the CIA, George Tenet. We hope that the Palestinian side would do the same and we will be able to move ahead for better days for Israelis and Palestinians to the end of violence and terrorism by the Palestinian side.
All right. We want to thank our guests for joining us today. We've been speaking with Danny Nave, who's the Israeli Minister of Parliamentary Affairs. He joined us here in the studio on a tour he's making briefly of the United States. And we very much thank National Public Radio correspondent Linda Gradstein, who's been on the line from Jerusalem. We hoped also to speak to a Palestinian negotiator, but I think that work is still in progress. I'm Jackie Leiden. You're listening to The Connection on National Public Radio.
This is W.